Drake Milligan on the podcast used to do like these Elvis impersonation shows. Mm-hmm. Was it really Gene Simmons who convinced you to go on America's Got Talent? But how'd you even get on the phone with Gene Simmons?
Well, I had done American Idol, decided to withdraw from the competition.
Were you single when you went on that show? Because every single girl on that audition is screaming at you. Single, do you think the show ruined your relationship?
Yeah, no, I ruined my relationship.
I've never seen anything happen as much as this is happening.
That's some great placement there.
Are you sponsored by Celsius?
No, I'm not.
Why you drink Celsius? For the energy? What is Celsius? What?
It's the 200 milligrams caffeine. I was like a big coffee drinker for years.
Really?
And it's just my stomach can't handle coffee anymore.
You get the runs?
I just like, just generally uneasy.
Just generally uneasy. But Celsius does it for you?
Celsius does the thing. Sometimes you can get, it's a little too much. It's like...
I don't drink coffee ever.
Yeah. Have you ever drank coffee?
Yeah. I drank coffee a little bit when I was a freshman in college. And I just feel like I didn't need the caffeine.
Yeah.
And it would make me feel so jittery. That now, even when I'm traveling and I'm jet lagged, I still don't drink coffee. Because it just makes me feel worse. And then I can't sleep at night.
Yeah.
Like I'm
There's
a mess.
That. There's Vince Gill says he's never drank coffee. Ever.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
This is why Vince Gill and I have a lot in common.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Guitar players. Drink coffee.
Yeah. That's pretty much it.
He also said he's never sent a text.
No, that's not true.
Yeah.
He's never said that.
He said that to me?
He said that to you?
Yeah.
He never sent a text?
Said he's never sent a text.
That's crazy. Who's getting along? Who's getting around? Do you think he has other people send his texts for him?
Maybe.
God.
Maybe.
What a life to live. You wearing a watch right now? What kind of watch is that?
It's a Rolex Submariner.
Are you a big watch guy? Do you have like a collection of watches or is that like your one?
I have like
nice
four
watch?
Watches.
That's actually a decent amount of watches. Like are they all nice?
It's these and I have like three Hamiltons.
Three Hamiltons.
You know, like the Hamilton Venturas. Are you a watch guy?
No, but I mean, I'd like to be a watch guy.
Yeah. I like this one. I mean, this is just. That's obviously.
Where'd you get? When'd you get that watch?
This was my dad gave it to me. It was kind of like he had got it when I was a kid for like a graduation gift, you know. He bought one that he was going to give to my brother and give one to me, and then I didn't graduate, and then he felt bad.
You didn't graduate from high school?
I didn't graduate from high school.
Really? Because you got the TV show or
Sun Records? Yeah.
Because you got the Sun Records CMT.
Mm-hmm. TV I left
show.
High school. It was like Valentine's Day of my senior year. Yeah.
And so you left the senior year of high school,
mm-hmm.
and you never went back, or you never
I got my GED.
Okay.
So,
but you didn't.
Good enough. Dang it!
Did you ever miss out on like walking with your class, or like did you care about? Did you go to prom?
No, I had a prom date that changed her mind.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Wait.
She changed
first
her
of all,
mind.
Who is changing their mind on Drake Milligan? What
changed
are you talking about? Why did she? What do you mean?
I had asked her to prom, and I was still like, I guess prom was kind of coming up by the time I had almost left school. Maybe like within a month. I asked her like pretty early, fairly early to prom. And then she like a couple weeks later was like, hey, I can't go to prom with you.
Why? What was the excuse she gave?
She's going with somebody else.
She went with someone else?
She went with somebody else. And then I didn't even end up going to prom because I was... filming a TV show. So
well, that was kind of the best way. You were like, by the way, even if you had rejected me, I would have rejected you.
Yeah. I wanted to go though. For my Elvis days, I had a gold LeMay jacket, a nice gold LeMay jacket. I was gonna wear it.
And that's what you were gonna wear?
Yeah.
Was it cool? You were such an Elvis fan when you were a kid and you used to do like these Elvis impersonation shows.
Mm-hmm.
Were you like, did that make you cool or were you like a total weirdo being this kid who was like so into Elvis?
Yeah, I was totally weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's why she didn't.
I mean,
go
I was
you.
Yeah, probably.
No, that can't
but,
be.
But I mean It kind of separated the two. I wasn't, when I was a little kid and I first discovered who Elvis was, I was like serious about it. Like everybody knew
mean?
I was the Elvis kid and I'd dye my hair black and like try to look like Elvis all the time.
Yeah.
And then that was definitely the weird kid then. By high school, I was like, I had a normal kind of high school life, you know, my friend group and everything. And then the Elvis thing was just kind of like, oh, go off on weekends and summertime and.
What's the best Elvis footage where you were really getting excited about? Like, was it the early days or was it like the Vegas stuff? Like, what's the best Elvis footage?
Elvis footage? I mean, the best like quality stuff is from the 70s. I mean, you can watch like Aloha from Hawaii. 73 is great. That's the Way It Is is probably one of my favorites. Like Elvis 1970, it's when he's playing the International.
It's called That's the Way It Is?
That's the Way It Is, yeah.
What is that, like a concert? Is that
it's called, it's a culmination of concerts from 1970 when he's playing the International. So it's kind of his big Vegas comeback. And he's like super skinny. It was right after the 68 comeback special where he's in the black leather,
yeah,
kind of famous. A couple years after that, where he's playing his first like live show, string of live shows back in Vegas after, you know, not playing live for 10 years, which is wild, by the way.
Elvis Wait, didn't is that play the live. Timeline? I even saw
Elvis
the...
didn't play live for about 10 years.
That's when he came like back to Vegas.
From like 58 to about 69. He made a play. He played like one benefit concert in like Pearl Harbor or something like that in the 60s. But other than that, didn't play a single live show. And that was the prime of his life. Like he was 20, I mean, from... I guess he would have been, yeah, in his like late 20s, early 30s. Didn't play a live show all the way through his 20s.
So why is that the best footage for you? Is it just the most high quality footage?
Most high quality. He looks good. He's moving good. He's got the swagger. I wish there was more stuff from the 50s. I mean, because if there was more stuff, it'd be awesome.
What is the stuff from the 50s that you were watching when you were a kid? Like anything?
The TV specials mostly, like Ed Sullivan Show and... a lot of those, like, you know, TV shows he did in the 50s are decently good, but there are only a couple songs here and there, you know. But there's some good, like, kind of bootleg live footage stuff that you can kind of see, and they've tried to sync up some kind of audio to it, and it's very blurry, but you can kind of see the magic of, like, a live show, Elvis in the 50s, when it was, like, crazy, like, pandemonium, you know.
That's what you see... When in the that footage from the 50s,
you try, you kind of, you know, it's so some of that stuff's so bootleg and blurry.
But what was it about him that really that you were so into, or still are into? Was it the music, or was it the fact that everyone was like fawning over him? Like, what was like?
I was just drawn. I mean, I discovered Elvis through an Elvis impersonator when I was about 7 years old.
Yeah,
and I'd always heard during Christmas time, I would hear Blue Christmas come on the radio,
yeah,
right? And I loved that song. I never really knew who sang it. I just loved Blue Christmas. And I would get so excited when Blue Christmas came on, all when I was a kid. And then we were out eating at a like burger joint in Arlington. And there was an Elvis impersonator there, this guy Carlton Hurdle. And I'm still friends with him. And he's like 6'8". He has the big jumpsuits. And I was just like, what is this? You know, 7-year-old me was like, what is going on? What is this? And I thought it was the coolest thing I've ever seen. So I went home. My mom's like, you know, hey, you know,
that's Elvis.
She like explained, like, you know, that's kind of Elvis. You know, she showed me like real clips of Elvis when we got home, and because she had seen Elvis back in the day at the Houston Astrodome.
Your mom had?
Mm-hmm. She was a kid. She said she barely remembers it. I'm like,
you
saw Elvis. But
so yeah. When you did America's Got Talent on your audition, you made this really great point when you were like, Elvis and the Beatles had the mm-hmm. Ed Sullivan Show, like you just said, like there you can yeah. watch Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show, and like I feel like that was maybe just so expected back then, like that's how you would break. And then today, do you think these shows sometimes get a bad rap, or like people don't get what they're really about?
Yes. Well, there's so much out there now. You know, yeah. That was the thing back in the day. That was all they had, and everybody would turn on their TVs, and everybody across the country had the Ed Sullivan Show on at a certain time.
Right.
And they knew to go there to see new acts, you know, new music. And I mean, as far as I could tell, you know, America's Got Talent or really any of the kind of competition shows are the only, are that kind of thing.
The equivalent of that today. Yeah.
You know, there's so many people out there who, you know, are... They're watching America's Got Talent at 8 o'clock. You know, that's like, that's what they look forward to. So, and they know to go, they want to see, you know, new acts. They want to feel like they see somebody break out and be a star. And to me, yeah, America's Got Talent especially does that. Because they really, I mean, the thing with AGT that did so well for me as compared to maybe doing any of the other shows was that I got to have, you know, I got to play original song from the start. Could have my band up there, could tell my story, and like it was just a perfect opportunity for me because I was already, you know, I had put in the work, you know, and I was ready as an artist. I felt like I had an album ready to go and everything, it was a great launching platform for me, you know.
Was it really Gene Simmons who convinced you to go on America's Got Talent?
It was Gene.
How'd you even get on the phone with Gene Simmons? Isn't that so funny?
My manager, Leslie Greif, is good friends with Gene. Leslie was the executive producer on Sun Records.
Yeah.
And that's how we met. That's how I met Leslie. His dad was a artist manager back in the day. It's like Jose Feliciano and Barry White and a bunch of acts. And Leslie grew up in that world. And I guess it just kind of became, eventually, you know, I just kind of like him, like, Leslie, why don't you just manage me, you know? And he's like, no, whatever, you know. And, but anyways, Leslie's good friends with Gene. Leslie produced Family Jewels.
The TV show. Gene
the TV
Simmons.
Shows.
TV
Gene
show.
Simmons, Family Jewels.
Yeah. So you get on the phone with Gene Simmons, which to me is so goofy, because is there any musical similarities between you and Gene Simmons? Like, really?
He came out to a show one time we did in Vegas, and he just bought a place in Vegas, and me and Leslie went out, and he invited us out to go show him his place, and then we went to lunch, we had crepes with a rock star.
With
we go
Gene.
In this, with Gene. They were, you know, in like Las Vegas, like a little tiny little mom and pop crepe shop. And here's Gene Simmons, rock star, coming in there, and we sat in there.
And what does he tell you?
We talk, he's a very smart guy.
Yeah, that's all I've ever heard.
And very smart, and Gene's really the kind of genius.
I wasn't gonna make it, but you made it
behind like the branding of Kiss, because Kiss was one of the first, besides Elvis. I mean, Kiss was like the first branded band.
Wait,
and Elvis was the first one that like had like
branded,
like where you
you buy the merch,
all the merch you could ever want. Like there was like that was people wanted to buy. It didn't matter what it was, as long as it had Elvis's face on it, or as long as it had Kiss on it.
Right,
they're gonna buy whatever it is. You know. I'll buy a set of headphones, Kiss headphones.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And Gene was kind of, they were one of the first ones to really do that, you know? And then he's smart in that way. And just you can tell musically he loves music. He's a big Ronnie Millsap fan. We talked some Ronnie Millsap. Yeah.
So wait. But I think when you were thinking about doing AGT, you got on a phone call with him and you were like, I don't know if I should do this.
Yeah.
What do you think, Gene? And somehow he convinced you to do it. What did he say to you?
He was just like, he's like, so we're all kind of sitting there, a lot of my management, and we're thinking, you know, should we do this? We had the opportunity, and it's like, it's something we want to do. And I was skeptical. I had done American Idol in 2017. I had auditioned, got through, decided to withdraw from the competition. So they aired the audition. I never went to Hollywood.
Why'd you withdraw? Because you put out like a statement where you were like, I didn't feel ready.
I wasn't.
But how'd you have that insight? Because I feel like every kid gets on American Idol, and who's gonna not take that shot?
I just realized it's like, what am I gonna, you know, I kind of saw ahead. I had just done Sun Records and I had gone out to LA for a little bit, and I thought, and I'd done really no work writing or anything, and I'm sitting there thinking, what am I gonna sing on this show?
Covers. Besides, isn't that what people sing on American
covers,
Idol?
Besides, and Elvis songs, and it's like, what is that gonna exactly do for me? Then I'm the Elvis guy.
Yeah.
Which I still feel like I am. But
why
anyway.
Were you so confident that you would even have another opportunity?
Yeah, well, like, I'd gone to Nashville a little bit, and I saw some doors opening in Nashville where I thought, okay, I can go and like at least get into some songwriting rooms and start making something happen, you know, start really working. And that's what I did. I spent, you know, I guess those first 4 or 5 years here, you know, just writing and being in the studio and learning what I wanted to say as an artist. Where were we at?
So you signed this record deal with EBR.
Oh, yeah.
And now you have this opportunity to go on AGT, and you don't know if you should do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get on the phone with Gene Simmons, and what insight is Gene giving to you about this to convince you to go on the show?
He goes, he's like, here's the way I see it. You can either go tour for 5 more years, and I was already touring at that point, trying to get anybody to show up to shows. You know, if we had 150 people at the show, that was great. And he's like, you can go play for 100 to 600 people at a time for 5 years, and you can build it that way, go all the way across the country, and you can build it that way, and it's a way to do it. Or you can go ahead and get in front of 10 million people. It either works or it doesn't. If it doesn't, you're back to where you were. Option A again. If it does, you broke the ice, you know? And luckily for me, it broke the ice enough. And I think part of what we were able to do with that show was capitalize on it. I had a great team around me. I had the record deal, I had the publishing deal. And I think I was one of the first artists to go on that show that had a record deal. You know, a lot of them don't want you to have They don't want you to be
yeah,
signed.
Yeah, so how'd you get through already having
it? It was the first
year
they opened it up. I mean, Simon opened it up to where if somebody signed and wants to come in here. You know, because I mean, you know, it's like, it's just like, even as a signed artist, it's not easy for everybody to break. It's hard to break.
It's really hard.
It's hard to break out. And I think Simon realizes that and knows that there's a whole lot of artists in Nashville who are signed, who are trying to get their big break. And America's Got Talent is a great avenue for that. And it makes the show look good. They to their credit, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they are really good. The producers of that show, Simon, they're very smart. They know what they're doing. And it was a perfect opportunity for somebody like me who was trying to get that break and had, you know, a little bit of story, but also had everything around me. I had a great team. I had an album ready to go that had already been, that first record, Dallas-Fort Worth, had been recorded for probably a year at that point, a couple of years at that point. But just trying to find a way to release it, you know, through COVID and all that. And yeah, it was just we were able to capitalize on it. And then take, you know, breaking the ice and getting that little, because you get a little spark from those shows, right? Everybody sees it's all excitement. And, you know, you can either kind of ride that for a second and let it fizzle, or you can try to keep that momentum going.
Why did, like, Simon kept saying to you that he was so impressed
that I stayed?
That you stayed. But did you ever think about leaving, or, like, did that ever cross your mind? Like, was that a weird comment that
it was
he
a weird
kept
comment.
Making to you?
What I think that might have been, a jab at me leaving American Idol.
Interesting.
Because he's still a producer on American Idol.
Oh, you think he knew that? Or he...
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think he, you know, he does his research. That may have been part of it, you know?
That seems unrelated, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to me, my whole thing throughout the whole show, I didn't, you know... Of course, winning would be nice on those things, but it's my whole goal was to perform as many times as possible on that show.
Yeah.
And the thing that's gone the furthest is my audition tape, you know, and like with most performances on there, the audition is the biggest one, you know, so as long as you got that, you're good. You know, that's the one that goes online and everybody sees, everybody hears that song. And as long as you don't, you can have something, you know, blow up in the finale rounds. But I mean, to me, from what I've seen, the auditions are always the ones that really matter the most. But I wanted to go on that show as many times as possible. And the live shows are fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's truly live. I mean,
who puts together the production? Like, does the show work with you?
The show works with you. And they have
to figure out the performance and the production for it.
Yep. And they have great, like, performance coaches.
Yeah.
And stuff like that really help you and work with you all week, you know, while you're there. To put together a real performance, you know, and it's all a collaborative thing.
Were you single when you went on that show? Because every single girl on that audition is screaming at you. Maybe it was enhanced on TV. Maybe it didn't feel that way in the room. But
I wasn't single when I went on that show. I was single when I came out of that show.
Really? Because do you think the show ruined your relationship? Just being away doing the show?
No, I ruined my relationship.
Really?
Oh yeah.
But what does that
show,
mean?
But the show didn't.
How did you ruin the relationship?
I don't know.
It didn't work out. Is it hard to date an artist?
It's hard. Yeah, I think so. And then once you get busier too, you know, and you have so many, it's like I just have so little time. You know, I can't imagine dating anybody right now. Just I'm on the road all the time. You know,
you're about to wrap up your tour. You've been on the road for a minute. You're wrapping up in Nashville.
Yep.
At the Basement East on October 25th.
The Beast.
If you're listening to this before October 25th, you can go to the show. If it's not sold out, I don't know. It might actually be sold out. How long have you been on the road, though? This was like a long tour.
Dude, it's still going.
This was like
we
the Jukebox
Songs. We keep on adding dates. Jukebox Songs World Tour.
World Tour. You sold out like 5 dates in London or something, right?
Three nights in London. Yeah. I've never played 3 nights anywhere. So it's crazy. We've done the Sea to Sea Festival for a few years over there, a couple years, which is a big country festival. Usually they have London at the O2. Then they have like Glasgow, Scotland, or this year they did Belfast, Ireland, and stuff like that. And they even did Germany and Rotterdam, the Netherlands. And I've done well. I went for the first time, I guess, last year and had a great response. And people watched AGT over there. So I had a little bit
of
a crowd.
Do they really?
People watched those clips from AGT.
That's where, and yeah.
And so I had a little bit of a, you know, already, but then I brought the whole band over and we had a crazy kind of 45-minute set that what's cool about the crowds over there, they love old school country music or old school rock and roll, which I also love and I play in my shows. And they're so they're so into it. They're so into a live show. And they will, like, they will move their schedules to go see their favorite artist play if they come over. And we had a great response there. We got to come back this past year and play the main stages, which was awesome. You know, O2 Arena packed out. It was really so cool. And then we, as I was over there this year, we put on sale headlining shows over there. Three nights at where we originally, it was a night in London, a night in Manchester, and a night in Glasgow. And the London, it's all sold out like immediately. We had to add dates. I've never experienced anything like that. So we added two more nights in London. Those sold out. We upgraded both the other venues twice. So now we're playing big, you know, 2,500 seat rooms.
Is your biggest market right now in the UK?
I think so. I sell more tickets in the UK than I do in Texas right now, which is crazy because I sell quite a
bit. But you do pretty well in Texas.
I do pretty well.
Billy Bob's and like you're, but the UK just loves it.
Yeah.
Who's been like the most crazy person to come out of a show? Like, have any heroes or like anyone really famous come out to the shows or like requested tickets?
I mean, Gene was wild early on, and it's wild to be playing and look down and there's Gene.
Which show does he come to?
He came to like a Vegas. We played at the Doghouse at Resorts World in Vegas.
Yeah.
Very early on, and you know, just like a daytime set or something, and he came and watched it. I'll tell you what, when we opened for Dwight Yoakam a few years ago, this was, again, early on, in Macon, and Chuck Lavelle came out, and that was really cool for me. And Chuck...
Who is Chuck Lavelle?
Chuck Lavelle. You don't know Chuck Lavelle? Played piano player, played famously for the Allman Brothers. One of the writers on Jessica.
Okay. Dickie Betts just like wrote Jessica. There was a co-writer on Jessica.
I think he had some of that piano stuff, so he's credited as a...
Okay, yeah. That was meaningful to you? That really meant
that? Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah.
Because you're a big Allman Brothers fan?
I just love music, great musicians.
Yeah.
You know,
and you want to like perform
and he's been
for
with
that
the Stones,
guy, right?
And he's been with the Stones
for... Is that the guy who plays with the Stones?
He plays with the Stones,
That's the guy with the beard, right?
Yep.
I know exactly who that guy is. That guy's unreal.
He's a class act. Just a great guy.
Really? So he came to the show.
He came to the show, and it's just cool to have a musician of what I think is like the highest caliber coming to a show.
Does that make you nervous?
Oh yeah. Yeah. But probably my band more than anything makes me nervous.
I was once on a gig with your guitar player. What's his name?
Ryan.
Ryan, you got a great guitar player. He's unreal.
You know, he started out playing steel for me.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's been in my band probably the longest. I've been playing with him the longest. And he started out on steel.
Well, he told me that you had to convince him there was a performance you did on AGT where you're like dancing. And you're like dancing
we do
in sync.
Our move. Yeah.
Exactly. He didn't want to do that.
No.
You had to convince him to do that, right?
Yeah.
Why was that? Was it really hard to convince him or how?
No. The thing is, like, you can't get that dude to stop moving now. It's like, to convince him, like, there's no convincing him at all now. Nowadays, he's like, we're wireless and he's like everywhere.
He's everywhere, right?
He's like the everywhere.
Do you ever tell your band, like, hey, guys, this is the Drake Milligan show. It's my name on the billboard. Just settle down, okay? Stop making this about you.
Not at all. And people love the band aspect too. People
love
because
right?
I've got a great band, and they everybody's really kind of found their own styles on stage too. Like everybody has their own thing, and it's part of the show. People show up. People buy tickets to see them too. So, you know, it is. And since AGT, for some reason on AGT too, they really connected to that band aspect because they had us up there as a band.
Yeah.
And so people who especially watched the show kind of connected to that. And everybody does have their own styles. And I love it because it gives people a reason to go see a live show, you know, whether that, you know, and it's not just, it takes pressure off of me because it's not just, okay, here's the spotlight and here's the band in the background. You know, on nights when I'm not feeling good or I'm, you know, not into it or whatever, I can lean on them, you know, and they can kind of take some of the pressure off, too.
No, that's why you tour with a band.
Yeah.
Basement East, October 25th.
That's right.
When your first record, Tony Brown produced, right?
That's right.
And he did George Strait, Vince Gill. Like, he's like...
Ronnie Crowell. Some of my favorite records, man.
Like, what did he bring into the room? What do you think he really... What was his impact on the recording?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Tony knows songs, first of all.
Yeah.
Big time in the song, like the A&R kind of like the picking the song. Because during all those MCA days, not only was he producing all those artists, but he was the A&R. So he was actively looking for songs, finding songs. He's such a song guy, such an ear for songs. And it gave me a lot of confidence because if Tony Brown liked one of my songs, I felt good. And I felt like, okay, this song is actually really good.
And you think he still knows what a good song is?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's just a magic to what he does. And it, really, I couldn't have done that record without him or without Brandon Hood, because they co-produced. And Brandon brought a lot. I mean, I wrote a lot of those songs with Brandon. We did a lot of the kind of roll up your sleeves and find a sound, right? What I felt like was my thing. And Tony helped a lot with that too. Tony was one of the guys that, because when I first came to town, I go, okay, I'm not going to be the Elvis kid. And I threw everything Elvis out the door.
Yeah. So what were you? Were you leaning into
Then I just became like a George Strait impersonator.
Yeah. You know? So it, you swung too far in the other direction or whatever.
And he's
And
Tony helped me kind of like, he's like, you got to use that stuff, you know, incorporate all those influences. It's part of you, man. And I did. So there's parts on the record you can hear a little bit of Elvis, you can hear a little bit of George, you can hear a lot of my influences just kind of come out, Buck Owens and stuff like that. And Tony really helped me with that. And Brandon really is so great at rolling up his sleeves and getting into a track. You know, he loves editing tracks and loves, you know, really casted that band of players, which I think part of the sound on that, and still guys that I use, Chris McHugh on drums, Tom Bukovac, big, huge part of that. Gordon Mote, piano, Bruce Bowden on steel, Paul Franklin on some of it. I mean, it's the casting players too. It's like a little left field, you know, because I was trying to make a more traditional kind of country record. To George's inside, or to Tony's inside, he's like, I don't want to use the same players I use on George Strait. I want it to sound different, you know, because I don't want to just make the same record. And so it was great because guys like Chris McHugh come in, you know, who's one of my favorite drummers. I've played like Keith Urban stuff, Rascal Flatts, like just iconic kind of drum parts too. And brought a different element to it. Not necessarily a traditional country drummer, you know?
Right.
But just brought that, the way he hits, the way like his sensibilities are great, you know, and bring a different element to my stuff rather than just being a totally traditional country music. To me, it adds life and makes it fresh.
Who's coaching these people in the session? Like, I'm assuming maybe it's Tony and maybe Hood, but like, will you go up to Tom Bukovac and be like, hey, can you play this a little differently? Or like, how quickly do these songs come together with
all
those
that
guys?
First record, I mean, some of it was because we cut stuff probably all the way back in 2019, 2020. Most of that record was cut. And I was also new to me still. Luckily, a lot of guys, I mean, there's plenty of ideas going around, right? I mean, Brandon's got ideas. Tony's got a lot of ideas. Tom Bukovac always has ideas. And
does he have too many ideas? Like,
Really?
Is he all over the place?
Sometimes too many ideas.
Like,
because
why? He'll be like, what does that mean? He'll be like, oh, we should try this or this or this. And
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
just pick
it's
one.
Like, dude,
like,
we're working on a budget here. We only have so much time, you know?
Really?
It's like,
so someone has to wheel him in, or anyone.
Sometimes
these people
but a lot of times, and it's like, he comes over, like, if you listen to, and what was so cool for me, a lot of these demos I had done of these songs that ended up being on the record, me and Brandon had done, Brandon did like full kind of demos, like full, pretty much with a lot of those guys, like kind of testing out players. So it was a nice like audition process for finding players that we eventually wanted to use on the record. And it was so cool seeing the change from some of maybe the younger session guys to using guys like Paul Franklin and Tom Bukovac, who came up with parts. Like for instance, and on the demo of Tipping Point, there's a song on the record called Tipping Point. It's kind of a Buck Owens kind of thing. I'm at my tipping point. And we just had, like, for the solo on that, you know, just play all over, whatever. Tom came up with a great part, you know.
Like a Don Rich thing.
Yeah. And because he can play anything, but it's so cool to watch guys step back. Paul Franklin did the same thing. A different steel player played on the demo and played a great solo, you know, technically great, all that. I loved it. And when Paul came in, Paul overdubbed on that. And I watched him sit back and come up with a part, you know, and a singable part. And I think that's some of the magic of those session guys, is being able to play commercial music at a high level and learn, you know, have all the abilities to play anything, but also be able to step back and come up with something kind of nursery rhyme-ish.
I feel like a lot of country that I'm hearing right now, it's like a lot of the intros or like the solos or whatever, like we're like losing these memorable parts. Like, mm-hmm. like a lot of what I listen to right now, I feel like the chords will pass through in the intro and it's like, oh, but where's the part? Like, yeah. you were just playing the chords and there's no parts. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot of that. And there's a lot of like, just people want to shred. You know, people just want to shred over stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's impressive. And it's impressive for a live show, for sure. But for a record, man, to make stuff that's memorable. I mean, I'm such a fan of Shania Twain records.
Yeah.
Think of all the great parts on those records.
It's oh,
like
yeah.
a song full of nothing but hooks.
Yeah.
And parts, you know? So, yeah, that's it. But it's been a great transition, too, because I did this last EP, Jukebox Songs, with Trent Willman, who I've known for years, been riding with him for a long time, a Texas guy.
What has he done?
What has he done as far as like production
yeah,
wise?
Yeah.
He does all of Cody Johnson's records.
Oh, yeah.
He's
okay.
done
yeah,
all
yeah.
the Cody Johnson stuff. And it's been a great change for me because it kind of, I guess maybe, you know, working with like Tony and Brandon is so, you know, they have such a vision, which is great for a new artist, especially. It's like I can lean on them, you know, but I've had to lean on myself for a little more for this. And I'm more confident than I've ever been. As far as like, I know how to speak the language of the guy, you know, guys in the studio. I know kind of what I want. And I'm so much more confident as a singer, which is another great part of having great session guys, is they watch me. Bukovac watches me like a hawk, and he'll pick up on little stuff that I do. Man, do that stuff. That's cool. And that is some of the magic to me of having good session guys, is they really watch the singer and listen intently. I do a thing where I go around sometimes and I'll listen to everybody's can, you know, that they're playing
yeah, yeah.
back stuff. I'll go and they're in the control room when I go around.
You'll hear their mix.
I'll go hear their mix, man. Tom's is scary because it's like, dude, you have way too much of my vocal in there. And it's like, I'm singing like crap today. I don't want you to hear that. But
I almost think that could be almost like, dude, like you're not producing this session. I'm not even calling Tom out because he's the greatest ever. But I can imagine if someone else in the room was like, it's like, do more of that. I'd be like, it's too much pressure. Like, I can't take that much feedback from people. Yeah. Like, do you feel that way? Or you kind of like it when people are like,
I like it. I mean, or yeah, I like it. It just gives me confidence. Or they pick up on something that I may have missed, something
yeah.
that I did. And they may pick up on and go, that's good. Do that. Yeah, do that. We'll make a thing of that. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I like that stuff. And you watch the session guys too. They have such a way of like letting go of stuff too. It's like they can play something and it may just not, if it doesn't feel right to me, it doesn't feel right to the producer, that they'll turn on a dime.
They
can play something totally different and let go of, you know, they may have thought that that part was the best thing they've ever played in their life, but they have to let go of it, you know?
Yeah, right, right. And, when's new music coming?
So I'm kind of in the throes of it right now. Me and Trent are collecting songs and I'm going through all my like kind of back catalog stuff that I've written over the years and finding stuff. We're constantly looking at outside songs and just kind of going through. I'm like, because we're going to make another record, hopefully to be released sometime next year. And I just want it to be really good. You know, I want to find some great, great songs. And I know I'm not going to write everything on this record. I did on the first record and that wasn't my intention. And this EP, three of them were outside cuts, you know, songs that I didn't write. And that's been a great, great thing too. Because I'm at a point now where I feel like, I don't think in the first record I could have taken songs and made them my own. You know, I would have been trying to copy somebody else. And now I feel like I know who I am enough to take an outside song, sit down on a guitar, and make it my own.
What do you think is your own, or what is that thing? How do you not sound too much like...
I don't know. There's points you go to become alive. There's points where, you know, you probably people think I'm doing a big Elvis impression on stage, and
yeah.
I probably am, you know. And
no, but I don't think so.
Or a Ronnie Dunn impression. I just love like all my favorites. I just try to take like anybody has. Everybody's done it.
I think everyone.
My favorite is Merle Haggard's probably my favorite country artist of all time.
Yeah.
And have you ever watched Merle Haggard doing impressions?
I feel like I have
it's
seen
amazing.
That.
It's amazing. He does this like there's a great clip of him and Marty Robbins together, and he's doing a Marty impression in front of Marty, and it's great. And he does like Buck Owens and Johnny Cash.
Can you do impressions?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I love.
Give me a couple of impressions. Can I put you on the spot?
Who maybe
everyone who does impressions is so like, oh, don't make me do impressions. Like it's so hard. Is it that hard to do, or like why is it annoying to be asked to do impressions?
I don't know, because mine aren't very good. I'm not a good impressionist.
Well, that would have been a key detail that you left out.
One of my favorites, and a lot of because I can do like the kind of stuff that kind of gets a little nasally, you know? So you start kind of going like Ronnie Dunn, I love.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do a terrible Ronnie Dunn impression. I do a good impression. Here's my impression of Ronnie.
We'll cut it out.
My impression of Ronnie Dunn is Jim Beavers doing an impression of Ronnie
Dunn. Okay, yeah,
I'm doing an impression of Jim Beavers doing an impression of
Ronnie
Dunn.
It's deep, yeah.
Like, she looks so good moving across the dance floor.
You know? I feel like that was just Ronnie Dunn doing Ronnie Dunn. Maybe. I feel like that was good.
If you asked Ronnie, he'd probably hate
it. That was good. Give me another. Can you do Buck Owens?
No, not really Buck. One of my favorites is John Anderson, and this is one of my great favorite bits that I do.
Yeah,
I want to hear John Anderson sing Boulevard of Broken Dreams by Green Day.
Okay, can you do it?
I walk a lonely road, the only road that I have ever known.
That was good.
I don't know where it goes. You know, it'd be great. And he could do all this like,
I feel like that's really good. Give me one more. You got to have one more.
Give me one more. Pretty bad Luke Bryan.
Okay.
And it kind of stemmed off when I did American Idol. Luke was a judge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said, man, you're cowboy cool, man. And it was a terrible game. But like, I love doing like the country girl, shake it for me, girl.
That does sound kind of like young
a little
Luke
bit,
Bryan.
But they're all kind of based on the same kind of part of the voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, kind of similar.
Right.
So that's kind of the extent of my impressions.
When you made your Opry debut, did you call Bill Anderson for advice?
Yes, I did.
Like, right? Why Bill? Because why do you call Bill?
Well, I write for Sony Music Publishing.
Yeah.
And Bill Anderson's been a staple there for a long time. And I've gotten to write with Bill and become friends with him. And it's so cool because I revere Bill so much. I mean, he's one of the last true great songwriters in this town, I think. From that generation
yeah.
of songwriters where everybody wrote everything by themselves. They didn't know what co-writing was. Vince Gill was actually the one who got Bill Anderson into co-writing. He had never really co-written, and they wrote Which Bridge to Cross, Which Bridge to Burn together. And because there were songs, and I asked Bill all the time about like writing with, because there's some, like he's a co-writer on some stuff with When Two Worlds Collide with Roger Miller. And he's like, there was no co-writing with Roger Miller. You know, you kind of would, you know, we'd bounce stuff off each other and eventually have a song, but it wasn't really co-writing, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't like you show up at 10 o'clock with another guy and, you know, write.
Do you feel like when you get in the room with Bill, though, to write, you could write a hit with him? Do you feel that way?
I feel that way, and I want to.
Yeah.
I want Bill Anderson to have it, because Bill's had a hit in like every decade since like the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote City Lights when he was like 19 or something like that.
For and Ray Whiskey Price. Lullaby for
Whiskey
Brad.
Whiskey Lullaby, and he's had all the way through, you know?
Yeah.
So I really want Bill Anderson to be on the top of the charts. That's one of my goals.
So you call him before your opera debut. Yeah. Why? Because you want his advice? Or like, why do you call him?
He's an opera staple, and I just called him and said, hey, man, I want some advice. And I'm glad he called me back, and I'm glad I missed it because he left me a great voicemail, you know, a very nice voice. And I have that voicemail, and I have it like forever now. And he's like, I don't really have any good advice, but I'll tell you Minnie Pearl used to tell everybody. It's like, you just go out there and love them, and they'll love you right back, you know. And that was great, man.
Is that good advice?
That's good advice, you know. Because Opry's such a place, too, if you go out there with a lot of love, I think the crowd responds to it no matter what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So that was some great advice. And he got to come up, I think this is my fourth or fifth time playing the Opry here pretty recently. And I was trying to figure out what to do, and I finally had Bill Anderson was on the bill that night. And I was like, great. And I called Bill and I go, hey, man, you want to do a song that we wrote? And so we did a song just acoustically. It was a song that we wrote called Willie Waylon and Whiskey. And I got to bring him out, you know, on the last verse, and he sang it. And it was a special moment. It was my first, like, legitimate Opry moment.
Yeah.
You know, where.
That sounds like a great song. Is that out? That song's out, right?
What's that? Willie Waylon Whiskey? Yeah. No. I haven't recorded it.
I want to hear that.
Yeah,
that
it's great,
like
man. And he brought in the great thing about Bill, a guy that's been doing it forever. A lot of times with those more veteran writers, you know, they've written everything. So they've spent years and years and years constantly coming up with ideas. The tap is usually empty on song ideas for those guys, and they rely on younger writers to come in and bring in ideas. Thing with Bill, though, he always comes in with ideas. He's got his notebook. He wakes up every morning, and he wants to write a song. And he comes up with ideas. And it's so inspiring to see guys like that. Because still coming in and being so passionate about it, you know, and it makes you feel good.
Do you and other, like, of the, I feel like there's, like, this rise of, like, I don't know what you would call it, neo-traditionalism country or whatever. Like, do you and Zach Top ever hang out?
I was just down in Fort Worth. I went back home. I was off this past weekend, and it worked out perfectly because Zach was playing first time at Billy Bob's.
Really?
My favorite venue in the world. And so I called up Zach. I'm like, man, I'm coming to Billy Bob's. He's like, you want to do a song? I'm like, yeah, come on.
You guys are friends.
Yeah. I've been a fan of Zach's for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and met him years ago, just kind of in the circuit of things. And I've just been a fan of his singing and his playing. And I just think he's great. It was just great. It's such a cool time to be a part of this, too, because there's so many young artists out there that I'm genuinely a fan of. And it's so cool to be kind of in the mix and be able to call and be friends with them. You know, Jake Worthington, Emily Ann Roberts, and a lot of these guys and girls who are just so good. I think and make timeless music. It's just, there's a lot of great young kind of more traditional country talent out there, which is great.
Good time to be in country music,
great time.
Right?
And Zach's killing it.
He's killing it, right?
He's absolutely killing it. And it's great to see because, you know, I talk to Jake Worthington about this all the time. Every time I see it, it's like, Any success that any of us have in like the kind of more traditional space is good for all of us, you know, because it shows the industry that people want that, you know, because maybe 15 years ago, even 10 years ago or so, you probably would have heard, you know, people just aren't into the traditional thing. It's not just not working, you know, but I feel like now I don't hear that, you know. Because people want it.
Yeah.
You know, 90s country is huge. You know, older country is huge.
What do you think is the thing that's going to take your career to the next step, whatever that is? Is it going to be a massive radio song? Is it going to be like a viral moment? Is it going to be something else? Like,
I think you need all the above
nowadays
to really make it. You need to have some viral moments. You need to have a big radio song. It definitely helps. I think above all, just making, for me, it's like for somebody like me, you know, every artist is different. You know, every artist kind of makes songs that can be successful for different reasons, right? And for me, it's like I just look up to the career of George Strait. And throughout his entire career, he's always had great songs and consistently great songs. And that's kind of where I just want to make a career out of it and do it as long as possible. And I think finding great songs too, you know, and making sure you incorporate the writing community in Nashville around you, which George always did. He's always a Texas guy, but he cut his records in Nashville. Always had a great studio band, great producer, great songs.
Okay, Drake Milligan's on the podcast. Drake, what are the top five George Strait songs for you?
All right. I'm gonna kind of go through the Full Hearted Memory is one of my favorites.
Full Hearted Memory.
That was nice. Great.
We can do a little harmonize. Okay. That's a good one.
I mean, I love some of the 80s stuff. The 80s stuff is kind of different than the 90s stuff. It's still going in the 80s. I love the whole record, Beyond the Blue Neon. It's more of kind of a swing record.
Yeah.
What's the big hit song
on that record?
I think Ace in the Hole might have been on that record.
You've got to have an ace.
I think they might have done another, like, old Bob Wills song.
Okay. That's two. Number three.
I mean, Run. Run, you can't.
Baby, Run.
The harmonies on that.
Everyone
are
loves
great.
That George Strait song. I feel like everyone always calls that one out as being one of their favorites.
I love that song. I love She Let Herself Go. I think it's a great song. D. Dillon song. Great song. And there's a track. You're a guitar player.
Yeah.
One of my favorite guitar parts ever.
I got to
listen to the verse after this. First verse. I don't know who it is. Probably Brent Mason. And he's just playing, you know, and how she take it when she said goodbye. And there's this big ring. She might
just
be crying. Lose some sleep at night. Fling, but he had no idea when he hit the road. And it's like, it to me, every time it hits, I'm like,
I gotta listen to that. Guitar. I know those moments.
And it's this great chord, big like chorusy guitar.
Just, yeah.
And it's like,
isn't that what crazy how session players can do that.
Yeah. Like, just play one little thing.
Like, you could do that too, perfect. But it wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be the same.
It wouldn't be the same.
Number four. And then number five.
Oh, I mean, these are all right now. It changes every day.
No, of course.
Such a big catalog.
I can only ask
so many
for right
songs.
Now. Yeah.
I will say right now, George's new record he just put out.
Yeah.
This brand new record, Cowboys and Dreamers. I think it's a great record. And there's a song that him and I think Dean Dillon and Jesse Joe Dillon, Dean's daughter, and Bubba wrote called The Book. And I love that song.
It's great. Really?
It's so good.
I got to listen to that.
It's so good.
All right. Those are good answers. Yeah. Drake Milligan, he's playing the Basement East on October 25th.
Right.
You gotta go.
The Beast.
It's probably gonna sell out. The Beast.
If
it's not already sold out by the time you're listening to this, just check online, see if you can get tickets.
And we're planning a fun show too.
Why?
Because we never play in Nashville. You know, we hardly ever play in Nashville.
When was the last time you played in Nashville?
Other than the Opry, it's been a couple years probably.
You can bring some guests out?
Maybe.
You gotta bring some guests out. Maybe. Who can we get? Who can we get to come out?
I gotta bring somebody cool out.
You've been on the road with...
It's a Friday night in Nashville, so there's not a lot of people.
Oh, you're screwed.
I know.
Who are you gonna
people
get
are on the road.
I bet Bill would come out. See if we can get Bill to come out.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Who else could we get to come out?
Maybe Bill? Vince. We should call Vince.
I bet Vince would go out. Why
you
not?
Think so?
What's
unless
he doing?
He's, well, he's,
unless he's out with the Eagles.
He's,
or something.
Yeah, he's out with another band right now. I don't think they're ever gonna make it though.
I think you're right.
Yeah,
it's kind of
a new thing.
I would get Bill to come out. Wouldn't that be so great?
It'd be great
to get Bill Anderson to come out. And sing this song, Waylon. What was the song?
Willie Waylon and Whiskey.
Get him to come out. You've been on the road too with Nate Smith, Cody Johnson. Big shows, right?
Yeah, the Cody thing's been really cool.
Really,
I got to see Cody. I've been a fan of Cody's for a long time. I mean, obviously, being from Texas,
yeah,
Cody's been huge in Texas for a long time. And you know, I got to see him in some smaller kind of venues around Fort Worth. And then work his way up, you know, smaller than Billy Bob's, and work his way up to Billy Bob's, and then get bigger and bigger. And then to be on the road with him this year and watch him in arenas every night.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And you were playing in the arenas too, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Playing my little slot in front of him. And
oh, dude. That's so fun.
And it's a great crowd to get in front of, you know,
people
that appreciate, I think, what I can bring to the table. And his whole crew. Cody and his crew are awesome. The whole crew is, like, so professional. Cody's awesome. It's just, like, it was so cool to be out there this year with him.
Dude, that's so great. I wish I called one of those shows. I got to come to the Basement East, though. I'm going to come to the Beast
show.
Come on. You got to get some good guests, man. Who are we going to get? Let's get someone.
Gene Simmons. We'll get Gene.
Let's get Gene out there. Oh, my God. Drake Milligan. Okay, the debut album, Dallas Fort Worth, is already out. It's been out for a couple years. Go listen to that. Honky Talking About was a single. I'm just looking on Spotify. Jukebox Songs. That's a great record, too. That's an EP. There's only like a handful of songs on that record.
Mm-hmm.
When did this come out? In February?
February. Yep.
God, it feels like it just came out, doesn't it?
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
What's the single on here?
I Got a Problem. I Got a Problem as a single. Yeah, we're out. We're out of like 5 to 6 radio markets now. Doing good. It's like, it's so cool to still see, like, if it's getting played, like, it's San Antonio's playing it, or Dallas Fort Worth's playing it, like, going to these places and playing shows, and people are, like, singing along.
They know the song. Yeah.
So radio works, baby. Radio works.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
So the song is out now. How long has you guys been pushing? This song's been out since February, right?
Yeah, it's actually been out. I think it was the first one that came out on the EP.
Yeah.
And it came out maybe last year sometime, maybe November, because we played it on AGT. And it's been,
that's right. I remember when you play on AGT, cause you came back to AGT, you did this like massive performance where you played it again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then we played on there and it's been great. Like it really did well overseas or UK. It did great. Got a number one over there with it, and Australia was on the radio over there, Canada.
Yeah.
So,
feel like you've got these songs in your catalog. Like you have a catalog of songs where there's like multiple songs. Like it's not just like sounds like something I do. Like you've got these songs that I think are like so signature and are easy to listen to, and they sound distinct.
Thank you.
And they have these hooks in them.
Yeah. There's some great songs. The first record, there's so many songs. Like I feel like I could have been singles. Overdrinking, Underthinking. I know. It's like, and we had some like radio play in like Texas, like the Texas kind of markets just picked it up because they'll just pick up whatever they like, you know. And it's like my second biggest song and it is, you know, with virtually no radio play, you know,
yeah.
It's just people reacting to it. Hate Everything She Tries On, another one like that.
Yeah.
Like, people just reacted to that song.
And you've got a one for money, yeah. Two for the
oh,
show.
Yeah. Like, Kiss Goodbye
like,
All Night.
Like,
yeah.
That's like a signature, like, part of that song.
Yeah. Like, that I stole from Blue Suede Shoes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But that record is, every song on that just sounds classic country.
Yeah, that's what I went
it's
for.
It's killer.
Yeah, to me, it was like, I'm trying to find jukebox songs. That's why we called it. I'm trying to find songs that could fit in on an old jukebox next to some of our favorite country hits. You know?
I feel like you need more music out, though. Can I say
I
that?
I
How
agree.
Do we get more music out,
Trey? I totally agree. I'm working.
What are we
on
doing?
It.
Like, there's
I'm working
like,
on it.
There's
as, soon
two...
as, I, as soon as I feel like I have the great songs and we're ready, and we already have a lot of great songs, but as soon as I feel like I have that well-rounded thing, we're going in and cutting it.
How many songs do you need? Just, I don't know, just put, just give me something.
As many as possible.
So you're, right now, here's the day in the life of Drake. You're on the road,
mm-hmm.
and then when you're not on the road, you're listening to songs.
Listening to songs,
and you're
writing.
And you're trying to figure out, how do I find more songs?
Yeah.
And then, are you always on the road?
Yes.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah, we've been constant this year, all over the place. Which I love it. I love playing shows. We finally got into a bus, which has changed my life.
Oh my God. Do you get the back of the bus?
No. Well, sometimes we've got like a lounge back there. It kind of, there's one of the benches back there folds out into a bed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'll sleep back there every now and then. It gets kind of hot in the mornings whenever we park back there. So, but I love the bunk. I love the coziness of a bunk and just getting there.
Do you think the members of the band are jealous that your name's on the marquee and... They show up every night and...
I don't know. That'd be a question for them, maybe.
And
I don't
play
know.
And...
They see all the extra stuff that I have to do, too, you know?
Yeah. Like this ridiculous interview. Yeah.
Hey, shout out to you for starting at 2, though, so that's...
What do you mean starting at 2?
Start at 2:30. It's great.
What do you mean? What's... Why
instead of, like, 9 a.m.
Are most of the interviews at 9 a.m.?
Sometimes.
I tell everyone, most of the time, people are like... Like, what time can we do? And I can do, I'm open on this day, but we have to do the afternoon because I hate interviewing people in the morning.
Yeah.
But then I'm scheduling a really big interview with Keith Urban if it's going to get done. And I said, I'll only do it in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And they wrote back to me and they said, well, Keith's only going to do it in the morning. And I said, all right, we'll do it in the morning.
Drive a hard bargain.
I was like, okay, we'll do it in the morning.
But I think they see all the extra stuff that artists have. You know, you just have to, you know, we get to where we're doing a show too, and it's like I gotta run and do a news interview in the morning and do all sorts of stuff, the extra kind of curriculars, and they get to hang out.
Yeah. Do you think those things, like, do you go on the local news station, and then do you think that helps sell tickets?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah,
I think it does. You know, it's just, to me, it's like there's so many avenues to, as an artist, to get out there, whether it's on TikTok or whether it's, you know, whatever it is. I think the more you can. It's just all about still just getting into people's living rooms, you know, and not a creepy way.
Or in a creepy way. That's
not a creepy way.
Or
that works
creepy
for some
way.
People too.
Whatever puts butts in seats. If that's going to get it done, that's fine.
But it's just, you gotta make sure you're out there in every way possible. And I just love doing it. I want to make sure I have a career in it too. So I'm just like, I want to do everything as long as I can stay healthy and not run myself out doing it. You know, I'm willing to do it because I want to be doing this forever.
Drake Milligan on the podcast. Dude, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
It is Tuesday, and he's probably going to be on the road this weekend.
Yep, we're headed down to Florida.
Florida.
We didn't think the shows were going to happen. I know Milton came through.
Florida.
But all the venues said, we're good to go. We got power, baby. And that, if y'all want to get down here, we'll come down there. So
we'll rock. We're going to hop on the bus, and we're going to roll.
Yep.
And he's single.
I'm single.
And he can't picture dating anyone. So don't even think about sliding into his DMs or trying to make a move. This guy's career first, all the way. That's what's on his mind, okay? But maybe if someone special came along.
Yeah, I mean, it would take the right one.
It would take the right one to really... Would she have to be in music? Or he? I don't know. She Would she have to be in music?
Preferably not. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a line? Like, are you looking for a nurse who can take care of you? Or
that'd be kind
of
cool.
Like, we have no clue.
Somebody with a career, too, you know, that's got her own thing going on.
She'd have to have her own thing going on.
Yeah.
And she would have to be confident in your big star, in you being a big star.
It's a tough thing, dating an artist.
Is it a tough thing? It's a tough thing, right? God.
I can't.
I don't have this problem. But I can't get a date anyway, so it doesn't even affect me. Oh, my God. All right, Drake Milligan. Can we harmonize something?
Yeah.
What can we? I've done this with people in the past. Sometimes it works out better than other times. Is there a song we can harmonize to?
I don't know.
I'm not a great singer, which is what which is what makes it more fun. Give me a song. I feel like you were already singing something, like a George Strait song, like something.
I love the harmonies. You know, True.
No. Oh God, that would have been a great one.
What about Run? You know Run.
I could do Run. Yeah. Well, hold on. Do you know the lyrics? Let me pull up the lyrics.
Well, we can just do the chorus.
I don't even think I know the chorus, but I think if I saw the lyrics, I would be able to know it. Wait. Let me see. Hold on.
Baby.
Wait. The thing is, can you do the harmony? Because I'm a horrible harmony singer.
No, I'm a horrible harmony.
Are you
sure?
We're screwed. This
I have enough time
work.
With it. We have hard enough time.
This isn't going to work.
What about an old Buck Owens? You know, Buck Owens.
I can do anything, Buck. What do you want to do?
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my.
Are we doing a harmony though?
I don't know.
We can't do the. Oh, I can't do the Don Rich part.
Oh.
If we do unison, it's gonna be so embarrassing. This is only gonna work if we harmonize. What is the harmony part for?
Tiger. Well, we could do Tiger by the Tail, but you can probably.
Tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I don't know if that's right or not. It won't be much when you get through to me.
See, I got the harmony there.
Yeah, you got the harmony. That was nice. Yeah. What was the other one you were singing?
The
sun's gonna shine. Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. All right, we'll cut
Love's
it there.
Gonna live here again.
Oh, I love those records.
They're so good.
Those
Don
records
Rich.
Are so good, right?
Don Rich
is what makes those records unbelievable.
I will spread the gospel of Don Rich till I die, man.
I think he's like the BB King of country music.
Yeah.
Because hear me out. How much influence are those licks that Don Rich played, but they're simple? So if you're like,
and Don's singing.
Oh, my God. His singing on those records is incredible.
Singing
is incredible.
Amazing.
But you know what I think is the most underrated part of all those records? It's Buck Owens' acoustic guitar playing.
Mm.
Just the way he goes, chug, chung, chung, chung. Like, he just lays it down so heavy.
Yeah, Buck is a great player. And his tele parts are great, too. You don't realize how much of those they doubled.
Didn't he teach Don a lot of those licks anyway?
Probably.
That's what I've heard.
Well, Don was a fiddle player.
He was a fiddle player. That he taught him how to play
and
guitar.
Really kind of started playing guitar in Buck's band when he was like 17.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm sure he learned a lot. There's so many great... Merle played in Buck's band.
Yeah,
back in the day.
And didn't he steal his wife or something? Or isn't there
something
like
that?
Yeah.
But also, Merle came up with the Buckaroos.
That I did know, right?
He goes, you should name your band the Buckaroos. Yeah.
That's so good. I love those records.
Yeah, people should go listen to the Buckaroos stuff by themselves.
Oh,
like Don and the Buckaroos.
Yeah.
Some great stuff in there with just Don singing. And there's some great records like that because Don was a great singer.
Man. Oh, my God.
Great singer.
The record for me, though, is the Live at Carnegie Hall record. That's what everyone always says.
Is that
cites,
the one where they do the Beatles bit?
Yeah.
They do the Beatles. And
they apparently twist and shout.
Yeah, they do twist and shout. And they all have these Beatles wigs on. For apparently they like. And then there's a part where one of them like throws the wig down and shoots it with a cap gun. Or something like that.
Yeah. There's some weird skits in there, which I don't really like.
But it's great. As far as like me and my band go and listen to a lot of the Buck live stuff.
Yeah.
A great live show. Everything kind of molds into each other. All the songs kind of like the way they transition songs is great.
Yeah.
Pretty much because a lot of those Buck sounds, they kind of had their, a lot of the songs are kind of the same.
They do medleys where it's like you don't even realize the songs are changing because the songs are like pretty similar.
Which is great though. It's a great, and it's just a great band. Great band.
Oh my God. I love those records. Yeah. Drake Milligan on the podcast. Right. We're wrapping it up. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you, buddy.